Welcome to the Hearts of Oak podcast. Hearts of Oak is a populist free speech alliance that seeks to push back the cultural Marxism that pervades all areas of our society. Free speech, religious disagreement, children's rights, and an open and free discussion on any topic are the bedrocks to a democratic free society, and we seek to promote and champion these basic rights. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Thank you so much for joining us. It's wonderful to have you with us, and it's great to have my good friend, always good for a banter chat with, Neil McRae. Neil, thank you so much for joining us once again.
Thank you. Looking forward to it, Peter. We've got far too much to discuss, haven't we?
We have. So if you go on too long, I'll just cut you in midstream. So don't worry about that. I can turn down your volume, Neil, so it's all good. Chris Davis, 33. Who needs Morrissey when you've got Peter and Neil? Oh, you're so kind, Chris. Thank you. Eileen Bryson, thumbs up to Chris on YouTube there. Valerie Green, hi from County Antrim. Oh, I've got the first... Two out of the first three are Northern Ireland. This is wonderful. On Facebook, John Gleeson, hello from Luton on YouTube. Anne Turner, evening, everyone. Eleanor McIlvenna, hi. My own mum. Good to see you, mum, on Facebook. So drop your comments down the side and let us know how you're watching. It's great to see what's happening on brand YouTube, actually. A lot of you on the one we did with Caroline Farrow, who has just been having COVID and came on to discuss it and the quirky things that she's learned. No groundbreaking exposés, but she wanted to share her journey, her thoughts. So that's actually one of her highest. So it's just heading up to 1,000, and we just did it on Thursday. So thank you for watching. Thank you for listening. Can I give a call out to our moderators last time? I said thank you for our moderator team for doing a fantastic job. We've got a whole back office team who do an amazing job as well. And we were chatting this morning, and they told me that we, because of Podbean, all the audio ones going out, that we now have downloads in every single US state, even Alaska. So it's interesting that the interviews we're doing, the message we're doing, and that every single US state regularly downloads it. So it's wonderful to see that. So any Americans joining, great to have you with us. And I hope you can help us make sense of British news. Can I very excited about two interviews you have coming up. I did pre-records. Jimmy Glazoff is a managing editor of Front Page News, Front Page Magazine. We had David Horowitz with us, who heads that up. We've had Christine Douglas-Williams, who writes, Bosch Fossen, who writes there. He's joining us on Monday. It was a pre-record talking about the big issues the US faces. And on Thursday, I had the privilege of chatting to Robert W. Malone, MD. He is the inventor of the mRNA vaccine. He is not anti-vaccines as a whole, very pro-vaccine, but very critical of Fauci, of big tech, of big pharma, and of government lockdowns and how they have used, and about booster. So very interesting to talk to someone in the field who's an expert in that area, who's very critical about what's happening. So that's Thursday, Dr. Robert Malone. But tonight it is Dr. Neil McRae. And let me play you, first of all, a clip from the wonderful ex-health secretary. Here he is.
This vaccine will not be used for children. It hasn't been tested on children, and the reason is that the likelihood of children having significant detriment if they catch COVID-19 is very, very low. So this is an adult vaccine for the adult population.
Interesting that actually I would say Matt Hancock says some sensible things. Of course, we turn to today. This is the front page of the Times. Children set to be jabbed from early next week. Front page of the Telegraph, same story. Front page of the Mail, which I picked up, same story. The Mail says chaos over jabs for kids. Shock as experts don't back them. Ministers dramatically ask Witty to reconsider. So what will parents think? And they say here, after weeks of pressure for a decision, the Joint Committee on Vaccination and Immunisation ruled the 12 to 15 age group should not get COVID jabs. It said the benefit to their health was not large enough to outweigh the risks. But in an unprecedented move, Health Secretary Sajid Javid immediately asked the Chief Medical Officer for a second opinion. Neil, this is really interesting because the government have all these advisors to follow the science. They give the medical advice, and yet they seem to disregard the medical advice, which puts a lot of questions into your head. So obviously, all come out today. What are your thoughts on this, Neil?
There's a problem here for the government in that the government knows that it's following a global program. And that would have been known, I believe, to people at the top of the government, the cabinet, Boris Johnson, way back in before March, I think, before our lockdown. I suspect it was known about way back in January, maybe even before. And what we have now is the government going to the next level of the whole population vaccination program and coming up against some stiff opposition. And some of that opposition is coming from the scientists. There are scientists who know that the vaccine is simply not needed for children. It's not safe for children. And it's not even effective for children. So this is a problem. Now, of course, the government will have known there was going to be all kinds of problems in implementing this program, as they would have known in all the other countries in the world who, let's remember, are doing exactly the same thing. We often think this is just happening here because we just focus on what's happening here. No, that this program is global, and some countries are quite far ahead. Some countries are already injecting 5-year-old kids or even younger in some places. I think Scotland's ahead of England already jabbing secondary school pupils. But it is a big problem for the government that even though that they knew, they anticipated there would be difficulties in keeping all the scientists on board, all the experts on these committees on board. I mean, they've lost some SAGE members as well, haven't they? Even so, it's a problem because the public mood is shifting. And what I detect is that this could be Boris Johnson's poll tax moment. Now, some of your viewers may not be old enough to remember the poll tax when it came out in the 1980s. And what they may not realize is that the poll tax was piloted in Scotland. And I was living up in Scotland at the time, and there was some fuss and bitterness about this, but it wasn't really a massive thing. There wasn't like outrage. There wasn't like demonstrations going on in the streets every weekend. No, it was just more or less accepted. And that's exactly what's happened with Scotland with the COVID regime. They've just accepted. I mean, I was up there last weekend. They're all wearing masks. They're all being so obedient. And it was only when it came to England, when it hit places like London and Manchester and Liverpool, that people actually started rising up. And I think that this could end up, maybe not in the riots like we had with the poll tax, but I think we're going to get some serious resistance now with this. You can see the pressure mounting, and it could be, and I hope that it will be what brings down this government.
Yeah, completely. This is a huge issue, and I'm sure parents will be pushing back. It's one thing, an individual deciding they should get medication for themselves, but often parents will think twice regarding children. But of course, it's not just schools. What else have the government pushed on us? Well, here's Boris speaking once again.
I should serve notice now that by the end of September, when all over 18s will have had their chance to be double jabbed, we're planning to make full vaccination the condition of entry to nightclubs and other venues where large crowds gather. Proof of a negative test will no longer be enough.
There are still people that believe this nonsense. Think about it. You know, most of all the viewers, I'm sure, watching Hearts of Oak tonight, and you and I, and there's, you know, at least 20-25% of the population that knows that this makes no sense at all. And that the only sense that it can make is if you realize why they're doing it. You know, the destination that they're heading for. Yes, of course, it's absolute nonsense from a practical or a public health perspective. They're going to be bringing in the third vaccine as well. Is that coming up in another story?
No, I don't think so.
Right, because I think it's important to mention that, because I'm, as some will know, I work for the Workers of England Trade Union, and I'm defending care home staff against the no jab, no job policy, and having some very good successes actually through the exemption. But the wording of the new law doesn't say that the worker must have two doses of the Pfizer and AstraZeneca. Mm. Doesn't say two doses. It says the full course of an authorized vaccine. Now, of course, full course, as we've seen in Israel, if you're not keeping up, if a third dose has been instituted and you don't get it, you're counted as unvaccinated. Yeah. And you'll be just as much an outcast as the likes of us on this program are. In Israel, they've given out the booster. They're giving it to the whole population. And already we're seeing that new cases of COVID are appearing in people that have had a third injection, booster.
Hold off on Israel. We'll get to Israel. Don't worry.
Let me park that for now then.
Park that for now. Can I just another story? Just keep UK before we go. What's happening around the world, which is nearly as bad. Here we have once again Boris. What are Boris's words of wisdom? Fresh fears of winter lockdown as Boris Johnson hatches plan to extend COVID powers for another 6 months. It says the PM will face a revolt from furious Tory backbenchers. I very much doubt that, but we'll see. Over his bid to keep the legal underpinnings for restrictions. So here we have, once again, another. He wants to keep it, the Coronavirus Act, until March 2022. And that will mean it will have been in place, I think, for 2 years. We're told it will automatically lapse then. But once again, Tory MPs, pathetic, backboneless, and we saw only a handful oppose this because they're more worried about their jobs than actually fighting for the country.
Just about an hour ago, I got a leaflet in from my local Tory MP. And I'm going to return it to his office today, annotated.
Fraud.
Total fraud. These MPs are not representing us, our interests. They're just doing what they're told. Some of them will know what the program is. Others are just complying, you know, making sure they're able to stay in their seat and carry on as an MP. But Boris Johnson, of course, knows. He's at the top. He knows what the program is. He's being told what to do. But he is the person who's giving out the orders. And my guess is that this is the third or fourth time the 6 months of the coronavirus act, is it?
Yeah.
What people need to know, or what people should be alert to, is that these extensions are going to go on until 2025. That's what was planned. That's what was planned before the COVID-19 struck. And this is the 6 month extension. It will be argued that we need the 6 month extension because, of course, cases, but real cases, people who are really ill, will be mounting in the hospitals in the autumn. Why is that? Why is it that Britain, being one of the leading countries in the world for COVID vaccination, why are they predicting such a bad autumn and winter? Why?
You talked about the third jab. Mm. Actually, it was in our stories. This is looking at the White House. Dr. Fauci. Fauci says Americans will likely need third dose of shots. And you're right. Here it says, Dr. Fauci said it is likely Americans will need to get a third dose of vaccination to be considered fully vaccinated against COVID-19. Interest, it doesn't say that in the title. It just says we'll likely get. But then later on it says, well, are you fully vaccinated? Have you had your third shot? I thought I only needed two. No, it's three now. So you're right. This is rolling it out. And I've read all different reports on 9 months, 6 months, 3 months, 1 month. It kind of just feels like the pharmaceutical industry want to give as many doses of something as possible if you pay for it, and they make money and their profits go up and their shareholders are happy. Am I right to be so cynical, Neil?
Well, I think it's realistic. There are some countries that have introduced a COVID pass, which has got space on it for 8 vaccinations. And of course, that would take us nicely up to 2025 when this project ends. God knows what's coming after 2025. But boosters. So people hear this term boosters and think, that's because there's this Delta variant. And that they couldn't have known when they developed the vaccines, they couldn't have known about the Delta variant. And it's just like the flu jab, you know, it has to be tinkered around with and refined every year. So that's what people think. But that's wrong. The booster is simply more of the same.
Yeah.
The booster is not targeted at the Delta variant at all. And that's probably why the booster is already proving to be a failure in Israel. And I was just hearing tonight that Salman Zarqa, who's the vaccine advisor for the Israeli government, he's saying that they're now working on a fourth shot, and that the fourth one will be a different vaccine. It will be a vaccine that is much more powerful and able to deal with the whatever variants are around, including Delta and this new one called Mu or something like that.
Yep. Mu's the latest. Yes. Keep up with your variants, Neil. Come on.
Yeah.
You mentioned Israel. Let's bring up, because what's happening in Israel is really interesting, and I asked Dr. Robert Malone about this. I said, what on earth is happening? It was interesting him talking about it. But let me bring up this. And again, this is the information that's been out with the media. We're simply reading it and trying to understand it. And a lot of it doesn't make sense. So here we have the Daily Mail. It's every newspaper. And Israel is now the world's COVID hotspot. Cases soar despite countries' trailblazing vaccine rollout, sparking fears other highly vaccinated countries will be hit by another wave due to jabs waning immunity. So it says they recorded 1,800 cases per million people on Wednesday, nearly 0.2% of the whole population in one day. I think for 4 days running, they've been over 10,000, despite being one of the most vaccinated nations in the world. Mm-hmm. It's in the midst of an unprecedented new wave. And there are a whole load of different here we have is, so this is cases per million people. And Israel is streaks ahead of anywhere else. And again, while we something doesn't add up here, and there's some things we're not allowed to question, and yet it doesn't add up.
Well, it adds up nicely for those in the accounts department at Pfizer and Moderna and AstraZeneca.
Yeah.
What I find very interesting is how the media has gone from reporting deaths and hospitalizations with such almost glee, weren't they, for about the best part of a year and a half. But if you look at the mainstream media now, including the newspapers, and there's been quite a change. So sometimes the papers won't even report the death toll from the previous day. And, yep. and you know, this is a massive change. It's all about the vaccines now, of course. They always report how many people have had one dose or two doses and that sort of thing. So what's happening with the death figures? Is it that COVID is under control now because of the successful vaccination program, and therefore it's no longer so important to report the deaths? Well, anyone that actually looks at the data will see that there are 10 to 12 times more people dying of COVID now than where this time last year. Look at the deaths throughout August, much higher. So typically August last year, about 5 to 10 deaths per day. And this year it was well over 100 and sometimes 150, right? And now it's going up again. It's going up more now.
Yeah.
So why aren't the media interested in these death figures? Isn't that interesting? There are many questions to ask. And I don't think, you know, my job or your job, Peter, is to answer all these questions, but just to make sure that people are asking them.
Yeah, no, completely. And the thing with Israel this week, we've had Portugal and Sweden have banned Israelis from moving because they're so worried. Of course, you look at Sweden, it's since June, Sweden has had on average maybe 2 or 3 deaths a day, and it seems to have got rid of it. So it's interesting how different countries, different approaches, and Sweden was attacked, and yet it seems to be the best country to be at the moment.
We have to be careful about Sweden. I've been a bit naive on this. Why was Sweden allowed to do what it's doing? Why wasn't more pressure put on Sweden by the global regime to force it to follow the same line as almost every other country?
Yeah.
Why not? They would have, the globalists would have had the means to do that, to make it quite punitive for the Swedes. And again, you have to look at what the final destination is.
Yep.
Sweden has got all the technological facilities with its almost cashless society. Sweden is almost there already to bring in the social credit system.
Yeah, completely.
And that's why I think it's been left alone.
The one other interesting thing, I'll just mention it, we'll not discuss it, is that in Israel, many countries have had a mix of the vaccines being used. Israel is wholly dependent on Pfizer, which is a whole case study in itself, but we'll not discuss because we'll get in trouble if we discuss that. So we'll keep quiet. I don't want Neil to get me into trouble. Neil, you talked about the work you do with the Workers' Union of England. Let me bring up two stories about how it's affecting jobs. Denise Beresford, I need to bring it up because it is quite funny. The new variant Moo. She said Moo, is that opposed to Ba? So that was quite funny. It is. We're going to be cows and not sheep from now on. Let me play this little clip about what's happening in the States about people choosing not to get vaccinated and the impact on the workers. And then a story from Australia, I think it is. Let me play America first.
Tomorrow is the first day of classes for Chicago Public Schools. For many students, this will be their first time back in the classroom since the pandemic began. And tonight, some parents are still trying to figure out how to get their students to school. The district, like many others, is facing a school bus driver shortage. Last week, 10% of drivers quit, with 73 resignations submitted on Friday alone. Bus companies say this is due to COVID vaccination requirements. The district says the shortage means 2,100 students will not be offered transportation. So, to help impacted families, CPS is offering transportation stipends, $1,000 for the first 2 weeks of school and $500 for the following months. A statement issued this afternoon reads in part, "We are saddened and extremely frustrated by this situation, and we express our sincerest apologies to the impacted families for the inconvenience that..."
It goes on, but you can understand. And the other story I wanted to bring up, which is on the same lines, is looking at, let me bring up the story. So this is hundreds of Victorian ambulance paramedics decline COVID vaccine. Hundreds of Victorian ambulance have declined to be vaccinated, reinforcing calls for mandatory vaccination of all frontline workers in the state. This in Australia. Internal ambulance figures obtained by the ABC show that 256 on-road clinical staff from Ambulance Victoria have declined to be vaccinated, 4.6 the total number of paramedics. Obviously, these stories is just the tip of the iceberg, Neil, and this is what you're dealing with, people who make a choice. So do you want to kind of talk more into that? Because it seems to be spreading. In fact, I saw, I think it was Italy yesterday, announced that they were considering mandatory vaccines for all the population over 18. So it's not just the workplace, but everyone. And this seems to be where people are moving. So people will be worried about their jobs. And do you want to kind of discuss your work in that area?
Well, care home staff were simply the thin end of the wedge.
Yeah.
And what the Italian Prime Minister Draghi has done, and he's brought out thousands onto the streets of Italy today in protest, is he said that all adults must have the COVID vaccine.
Yeah.
And that's where it's going. They picked on the care home staff because they're generally they're a workforce of low pay and low status, and they probably thought that they would be easy to push into this. They're now realizing the government, they issued an impact statement this week showing that 7% of the care home staff is going to leave because of this vaccine mandate. And that actually, I think, is realistic, because in the care homes, I'm dealing with about 70 or 80 cases at the moment.
Okay.
And in care homes all across England. And typically it's one or two workers in each care home who are holding out. That's what it's down to, just one person. And if you think that a care home, just take an average, it's got about 40 staff, and 20 of them were quite keen to take the vaccine, because lots of people are, lots of people were. And then the other 20 are a bit reluctant, but then saw what was coming, saw they were going to be forced to take it or lose their job. So most of them relented. And then maybe three or four staff left. Now, that doesn't sound like a lot. So you've got one who's held out, is fighting to stay, and maybe four left. Doesn't sound like a lot, but actually When you multiply that by the thousands of care homes, and you're talking about between 20 and 40,000, well, that's actually 40,000, that middle estimate by the government. So how are they going to replace 40,000 staff? Now, this might touch on to one of your other stories, Peter, but I think it's it's something I'd like to, you heard it here first. It's something that's been running through my head a lot in recent weeks. And that is that I'm very suspicious of the agenda in Afghanistan. Now, you think, what's on earth's that got to do with the care homes in England? I'm very suspicious. There was no real reason for the American and British and other military forces there to allow the Taliban to just suddenly run rampage across the country. So there seems to be an agenda, and I think it's the same agenda of Joe Biden opening the Mexican border. It's that they know that they're going to be forcing these vaccine mandates in all kinds of workplaces, so they would need replacements. Yeah. Now, isn't it interesting how they were predicting 20 to 40,000 care home staff to go, and that they did, you remember, see how quickly, when the Taliban overran Afghanistan, and immediately Dominic Raab told us a precise figure, 20,000 Afghan refugees would be coming to Britain. You know, straight away he had that figure. And of course, 20,000 would then become 100,000 because they'll be allowed to bring dependents with them.
Yeah.
And I believe, and you can call me a cynic, and maybe YouTube won't be happy with me either, but I believe this is all about replacing the loss of workers because of these vaccine mandates in Britain, in USA, and in other European countries who are taking these Afghan refugees. That's what it's all about.
Well, let me bring, because we had an Afghan story in, let me bring it up early. And this huge, and the press secretary, who I never can pronounce her name, she couldn't answer this and refused to answer it. This is a story, as Biden repeats claim that nobody could have known Afghan army would collapse. Bombshell transcript from July reveals he pressured the Afghan President Ghani to create perception Taliban wasn't winning, whether it's true or not. So he talked to him for 40 minutes, July the 23rd, and he said, there is a need, whether it is true or not, to project a different picture. Just downright lie. So obviously they knew what was happening. They knew it was going bad. And they just said, don't tell anyone. Just tell them a lie. Don't tell them the truth. So you're right, Neil. It seems to be fitting together.
Yes. Well, I've been thinking about this refugee thing. And I did actually run it past somebody who thought, no, that's wacky conspiracy theory. But I think I've seen enough over the last year and a half that I decided to wear this T-shirt tonight. Because almost everything us conspiracy theorists say comes true a few months later.
Yeah.
We should call them spoiler alerts.
Yes, exactly. As they say, what's the difference between a conspiracy theorist and the truth? About 9 months.
Yes. Yes. And can I just say one more thing quickly about the Afghan refugees?
Yeah.
Is that some of those refugees will be given jobs as cooks and guards in the internment camps that are coming. Mm. And people need to know they're coming.
Yeah.
They're already building them in Australia and in Canada.
Yeah.
Internment camps are coming, and it won't be quarantine for COVID cases. It will be internment for the unvaccinated, if they can get away with it, of course.
Well, exactly. And you've seen, I've seen a number of the videos out from Australia about that. And it's actually looking at people, I saw a story of an EasyJet flight got back within 2 minutes of the deadline from a country that had just gone red paid thousands of pounds extra to get back, because if they missed that deadline, they would have paid £2,200 to be in a hotel for no reason apart from this is money-making. I mean, they could have easily said, you've got another day, or made some other provision, or stay at home for a week or two, but instead you must pay the fee, like the jizya tax, well, COVID tax.
Laura Perrins, editor of Conservative Woman.
Yeah.
She was one of the earliest outspoken critics, and she got a lot of flack for it. She was one of the first. And she said, right way back in March last year, she said that all these things that they're doing, like the example you've just given of people going abroad to a country and then they have to fly back suddenly, or else they'll, you know, it'll cost them thousands of pounds more and all that.
Yeah.
This is deliberate. This is to make people know that the state has all the power and that the state will use its power capriciously. And the more capriciously, the better, to make people feel they are powerless.
Yeah, yeah, completely. Let me see. We have four other stories. Let's do 2 minutes a story. This is on New Zealand. This is the attack in New Zealand. And it's weird. As soon as I saw this, my first thought was this must be an Islamic terrorist attack, because they didn't talk about white supremacist in the headline. Sure enough, New Zealand attack. Why was an IS supporter roaming free? We find out the 32-year-old was accused of plotting to use knives to carry out a lone wolf terror attack in 2020. And so he was known to the security forces, and it even said that the Prime Minister of New Zealand, she actually had been informed about this individual, so she knew, and he was being surveilled, round-the-clock surveillance, and yet he went and did this attack, six people injured, three severely injured. And it's interesting how the media spin something, but again, he was being watched by them, but I guess he wasn't a threat because he wasn't a white supremacist, so he wouldn't harm a fly, would he?
Well, here's a question, and I think this is as much about asking questions as giving answers, because none of us really know everything that's going on. But here's a question for you, Peter, and for the audience. How do you know this actually happened?
Because the media told us, so it must be true, Neil. Are you disbelieving our media? Surely not. No, I agree.
If they can do 9/11, they can do this. That's all I'll say.
No, I agree, Neil. The information we're given is the death figures we're given every day is because the BBC tell us. Well, if you turn off the BBC, then actually you suddenly feel safer. So, let's move on. This is a crazy left field story from Fox News, who still get some things right, even though my preferred is Newsmax or OAN. And here we have in San Francisco, obviously California is descending into a liberal hellhole. And here we have San Francisco will pay people to not shoot others. Cash for criminals. A similar program has been launched up in Richmond. So San Francisco is rolling out a pilot program that will pay high-risk individuals to not shoot anyone as gun crimes tick up in the city. These small investments can transform the lives of individuals, but they can also transform communities. So the Dream Keeper Fellowship will pay 10 individuals who are at high risk of being at either end of a shooting $300 a month to not be involved in crimes. So if you don't shoot anyone that month, you can collect your $300. I don't know how to respond to this, Nate. I don't know if you have any thought to this, but it's utter bonkers, completely bonkers.
In a way, it doesn't surprise me, because if you look at the way that vaccine skeptics, lockdown skeptics, are treated, and it's very like under the communist regimes of Stalin and Mao, where common criminals, the people that murder and pillage, are less of a problem to the powers that be than critical thinkers. And in the gulags in the Soviet Union, it was the dissidents that got treated the worst. They were at the bottom of the pile, and some of these people were professors in universities and that sort of thing. Suddenly these ex-academics were being treated as more dangerous and having committed more heinous crimes than heavily tattooed savages that had murdered and raped people. So this, I think, is the again, this is about an agenda. It's about getting a message across that, you know, George Floyd was a career criminal. And look how much they sank that he was sanctified.
Yeah, exactly. Let me just check our viewers, if you're watching and you've got the sad chance of being born white, then let me bring up some help you hit yourself a little bit more for the disgusting color of your skin. There we have white NHS staff are told to study their privilege and that they should feel uncomfortable by website that trains workers for senior roles. It is this the same old crap, but someone is there in the NHS doing their job, working hard, and they're told they should feel uncomfortable because of the color of their skin, which I thought was something you couldn't change, and therefore you couldn't treat people differently because of the color of their skin. But it's, yeah, it's just woke ideology, CRT theory gone mad in our NHS.
Well, this again is about making people comply. And I go back to what Laura Perrin said, that the point of the COVID regime was to be as absurd and confusing as it could be for people and to be as capricious as it could be, so that people came to realize that they are powerless. Yeah. And this is what happens if you work in a university, as I did for 20 years, or the NHS, is that this ideology is used. It's used to impose a culture where workers realize that they are powerless. They are so powerless that they'll accept being humiliated by these sorts of programs and training sessions that they have to do.
As a final one, and I had the joy of doing a whole day of training session when I was in City Hall. I know, Neil, you've also worked there. I did subject myself to an LGBT ally day because I was curious and I had to keep my mouth shut because I wanted to sit and learn. And it is horrendous BS that they're teaching people. That you can't just get on with your life, whatever whatever gender you've been born in, whatever your preference may be, just get on. No, you have to push this agenda. So, yeah, you might have missed that. I subjected myself to it. So,
well, I just had a very quick anecdote, Peter. I only went to one training session, and it was in February, just as COVID was starting to go around the world. And we had this trainer doing something on probably diversity or something like that. I don't know. I probably didn't listen to anything. But what she did do, which was interesting, was COVID came up just before the training session got started, and at that stage, it was a thick normal people, maybe even the Brexit voters, who were worried about this. COVID, and she, as a sort of white middle class Karen, she was telling us that, 20,000 people die of flu every year. People are getting quite hysterical about this. And that was the position then of the intelligentsia, if you like, that have been at the vanguard of this draconian COVID regime since. What a change.
What a change, exactly. Let me finish off on a exciting story. And of course, I've got my, where's my Trump? I've got my Trump hat there. Let me bring up a positive story, because it all seems quite depressing. Wouldn't want you to leave you sad and depressed. Here we have the GOP representative, Jim Jordan, says Trump is ready to announce his run for president in 2024 following the mess in Afghanistan. This was at a Republican rally in Iowa. Jordan is one of Trump's staunchest allies, said that he had just spoken to the former president about his 2024 plans. Said Trump has remained elusive, but repeatedly teased at a run. And it would be the perfect time, because Afghanistan, utter humiliation for the American people. And they really need someone, whether it is Trump or DeSantis or someone else. But it is a great opportunity maybe for Trump to come back for an encore.
Trump will be facing the same problem if he does run in 2024. But it will be even harder for him. It doesn't matter how many huge, exciting rallies he has in Georgia and Oklahoma. Doesn't matter. It wouldn't be Trump against the Democrat candidate, just like it wasn't Trump against Biden in 2020. It was Trump against Smartmatic and Dominion counting machines and rows and rows of dead people in cemeteries. That's what he'll be up against even more. They said, didn't they? The Democrats, after the dust had settled, Biden had got his seat in the White House, they said the election was fortified. Mm. And it would certainly be even more fortified if Trump were to try and get in again.
It says here that former Trump advisor Jason Miller said on Thursday he was between 99% and 100% sure that Trump would run again, which is, but as you're right, he still has the same system, establishment, big tech working against him. So it'll be no different, and they'll know he's coming this time. So,
yeah. And Trump remains very relevant, and the COVID story, which is being written as we go along. Mm. At the moment, the American administration is still really pushing the vaccines, and the VAERS system is showing a massive sort of carnage of serious adverse events and 16,000 deaths, I think, now. Mm. So is that going to get blamed on Trump? Because lots of things will continue to be blamed on Trump. And it was Trump that, launched Warp Speed, to get these vaccines onto the market as soon as possible. That's likely to be blamed on him. The vaccines were rushed because he was such a sort of man-child in the White House, just didn't know what he was doing. And it was impossible for Biden to change that in time to save lots of lives, which is what, of course, Democrats are very good at, apparently.
It is amazing that what was developed under Trump was bad, but suddenly a day later, whenever Biden got in, it was good. Mm. So, but yeah, that's the big issue I have with Trump, the whole push on the vaccine, that he seems to have been under that spell. And that's a whole other area of concern. If it was Trump or Biden, then Biden can fall over and fall asleep.
I don't know what to, obviously I'm not keen on that aspect of Trump's approach to COVID. But I can't help thinking that what else could he have done?
Yeah.
Because if he hadn't have allowed and encouraged the development of those vaccines, that would have been, he was quite limited in what he could do as president. They made it as hard for him as they possibly could. And the fact that he remained so popular and got, 75 million votes in the election, showed his resilience. But
I think he just had to let a lot of things go. He probably is just a bit ignorant about the science, really. So about the, you know, he probably naively believes that vaccines can save us from a coronavirus, although after 70 years of research, they hadn't found one before. So that was disappointing. And I think he'll need to change his tune on that.
Yeah, I agree. Thank you, Neil. I'm going to just bring up one or two little videos to leave our viewers maybe more depressed or cheerful. Workers of England.co.uk, as Neil said, he does work with the trade union Workers for England, and they are really the only trade union I can see that actually is supporting individuals, supporting staff, supporting employers as they oppose what has been ruled out in the workplace. So do go to workersofengland.co.uk, have a look at that, and it's well worthwhile for you to join that. And let me bring up, so this was one image which I thought was quite fun, telling you it's just 2 weeks. That's, of course, the frog in the boiling water. It's just a mask. It's just a jab. My God, why are you people so stupid? It's just an app to track you and your social media for everyone's safety. It's just a social credit system that will control every aspect of your lives. And it seems to be coming true. Let me play a little clip from Biden. Here he is.
Thank you all very much.
On the status of getting Americans out of Afghanistan.
Mr. President, what about booster shots? What about confusion about booster shots, sir?
Biden unable to answer any questions. Of course, he doesn't answer many questions. Simple questions about Afghanistan booster, but Biden didn't have an answer. Let me bring up... Oh, yeah, so this was a very telling picture. If I can find... Here it is. Let me bring it up 1 minute. And... It is this picture, very poignant. I think it was in London, actually. I think the picture was. And I fought for freedom overseas only to lose it at home. And I think that should stick in all our minds when we decide what actually we are allowed to do and free to do. And as Neil and I were chatting before we went live, people talk about getting their freedom back. And you think, what freedom? What freedom have you got back? So there are two clips. Actually, there's one clip on one image on Trump I want to bring up, and I don't know whether it's true or not, but it is a great story. And all the text isn't coming up, but understanding is that Trump had put a huge flagpole up where his golf course was, and he was told, no, it has to be only a certain height, and he rejected that. Let's see if I can find the full. He said, no, I'm going to have it up. And they said, no, you have to take it down, I'm going to fine you. So he got fined every day, supposedly, and the fine reached 100,000. And then Trump went to them and said, look, if I reduce it and the flagpole is 15 meters lower, would you accept that? And they said, absolutely. And he said, if we pay the money that you fine me over to Veterans Charity. So they said, yes. So he paid the money to Veterans Charity, took down the flagpole, cut the 15 meters off it or whatever. They then built a mound and put the flagpole back up. So it was back up to the original height. Don't know if it's true, but it's a great story and something you could imagine Trump doing. Final two little clips. One is how they are trying to say that COVID is a Republican disease. Let me play you this from, I don't know where it's from, MSNBC maybe. Let's play it.
Delta wave of COVID that it's falling most heavily on Republican areas and Republican voters. I mean, look at this map of the outbreak. You can see how much worse it is in states across the South, the states where Donald Trump won handling. Now we have concrete data that puts a fine point on how much this has become a pandemic of Republican areas. Christopher Ingram's a former data reporter.
I'm not going to any further. It is a pandemic of Republicans. So now the virus knows how you voted and gets you if you like Trump. Final clip is from Matt Walsh. Matt Walsh he's one of the journalists on the Daily Wire with Ben Shapiro when Candace Owens has just joined their platform there. Lots of fantastic programs out of it. This was a great one of him speaking in school. He's a local parent in whichever school and went to speak, and it's 2 minutes. Let me play this and then I'll wish you good night and goodbye. So here's Matt Walsh.
Hi, my name is Matt Walsh. I'm a community member in Nashville and a father of four. You and the school board have decided that our kids should go to school all day, every day, wearing muzzles like rabid dogs. I have listened to your arguments, and I've noticed that they're missing a few things, namely evidence, data, science, common sense, and basic human decency. You presented no facts at all, so let me do that now. Here they are. COVID poses almost no risk to our kids at all. 4.2 million children have tested positive for COVID. A total of 0.008% of them have died. What about the flu? The CDC estimates that 480 kids died from the flu in the 2018-2019 season. That's more than have died from COVID in a year and a half. Now, did anyone on this board suggest at any point that year that kids wear masks? Did anyone in this room suggest that at any point anyone wear masks for flu, which again is more dangerous to kids than COVID? That's a fact. Now, do you know what it's called when you force your children to wear masks for fear of a virus that poses almost no threat to them? It's called child abuse. You want to look up a disease, look up Munchausen by proxy, because that's what this is. If you think I'm exaggerating, then how would you respond to a parent who forced his kid to wear a football helmet every day, all day, for fear of falling coconuts and meteors? Your kid is almost as likely to die of COVID as he is from a rock from the sky. And yet, if you saw that, you would say to that parent that he is abusive, that he is forcing his kid to participate in this utterly insane charade in order to satisfy his delusional, psychotic hypochondria. Now, do any of you know what sort of psychological damage we do to children by forcing them to cover their faces, teaching them that the air is toxic, that everyone around them is sick? Have you wondered about the health effects of forcing kids to breathe through sweat and spit and dirt-soaked rags every single day? What about learning to read and they can't see the teacher enunciating the words? What does it do to a child's developing immune system if he has to wear a mask all day, every day? You're satisfied to place this burden on children anyway. And why? It's not to keep them safe. They are safe. It's not to keep the adults safe. They can all get vaccinated if they want. No, you do it to make yourselves feel better and to protect yourselves politically. The child's mask is a symbolic security blanket for you, not them. It's a disgrace and you should all be ashamed. Thank you for your time.
I think it was Matt Santos that said they force you to wear a mask. So they force you to cover your face with a mask so they can cover their ass. So that was a good. On that, we'll leave our viewers. Thank you so much for joining, as always. And if you've been listening, thank you for listening. As I say, it's great to have so many of you on the Podbean, and it was quite interesting to see that we are getting picked up in so many places, especially in the States. So thank you for that. Yes. We have, if you haven't gone to the website and subscribed to our emails, do please subscribe. Do click on that connect tab, heartsfolk.org, click on that connect tab and you can fill in your details, get our weekly email. All the videos are available on the website. So if you go to heartsfolk.org/livestream, it'll all be there. And we're also still got, we've extended into September, that if you do subscribe, if you do donate £10 a month or more, then you'll get a free t-shirt. So do go to heartsvote.org, click on that donate tab, 10 a month, a bargain, and 30p a day, and you get to get Neil thrown into that. So what, I mean, priceless. So yeah, we're giving out t-shirts. So if you do that, £10 a month, then put in the comment as you donate which t-shirt you'd like, and we'll stick one in the post to you. Give us 5 to 7 days and we'll put one in the post. I think that is about it. As I said, Monday, we did a pre-record with Jimmy Glazoff, looking at the big threat that America currently faces. Great, I had a great time with him. And Thursday is Robert W. Malone, MD, the mRNA vaccine inventor, who will be sharing his big concerns about pharma about Fauci, about restrictions that governments are forcing, and about the booster. So if you want to hear more about that, tune in on Thursday. So thank you to our viewers. Neil, thank you as always for joining us. You give up your time once a month, so thank you for joining us and giving us your views and your thoughts on the news.
Yeah, always a pleasure. And if I could just give one quick plug. There's a rally being organised in Carshalton down my way on the Saturday, 18th September, featuring Kate Shemarani, Anna Dubuisrey, and several others. So if anyone's in the London area, Surrey, Sussex, Kent, come along to that on the 18th of September. Thanks.
Okay, sounds good. Get along to that. And any questions, any comments to us, just as always, drop us an email, info@heartsvote.org, let us know what you think. So thank you so much. Have a wonderful rest of your evening, wonderful rest of your weekend, and look forward to seeing you on Monday with Jimmy Glasoff. So thank you and good night.
Thank you for listening. Censorship is real. To sign up for our weekly email and find links to all of our platforms, go to heartsofoak.org. Please like, subscribe and share, and in the words of Churchill, keep buggering on.